Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend, and you know, we're on the eve of Thanksgiving, and I was sitting and realizing that much of the crew's out traveling, we're all hunting, we've done things, and we've failed you in some regard, and I'm sorry for that. We have not had a Thanksgiving specific episode in a really long time, and I think that we could have room to do that, and we should be doing that, because Thanksgiving is such a great moment to think about food and wild food especially, and we're smack dab in the middle of hunting season for most people. So what I wanted to do though was pull back an episode from 2020, where we recorded a Thanksgiving-focused episode where we talked about some of our favorite wild food recipes and preparation methods. So hopefully if you haven't already created your preparation list or cooking list or in some regards started cooking already, you may give this episode a listen and get a little bit of inspiration from it. You'll hear also both Corey and Ben, who we haven't heard from in a while. They're on this episode, but like I said, it's a past version of all ourselves. So we do miss hearing those two chat about their adventures, chat about their favorite wild foods, and just generally hang out. So it's good to hear that. But I hope that you definitely take away something from this episode and able to jot it down and maybe share some new exciting recipes with your friends and family. So I'll go ahead and turn it over to a past version of myself. And Justin, take it away. Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvest to Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend. Those that don't know the soothing voice of myself yet, you do now. Today's a special podcast, so we're coming up, on our year anniversary here in a week or two, and even more importantly, we're the eve of Thanksgiving that you'll be hearing this, so we wanted to put together a little special show in order to celebrate that, and so we called it really a Wild Thanksgiving. And so we're going to run through some recipes with the crew here and just really get down to sort of the some of our favorites. They're not necessarily all of our wild game recipes, but from those out and around the wild game cooking community that we'll discuss. But first off, I want to do a little round robin and kind of give some updates on what's been going on with the crew, so you guys know who you're talking to and what we've been doing. Me, myself, kind of in a little bit of a downtime, a little bit of a lag in between the seasons here. COVID's put some interesting constraints on my travels, so dealing with that. But focused locally, the weather's been a little off for spearfishing, so we've been hitting it a little bit on the fly, targeting some tarpon and some cool things like that, trying to work on that Florida Keys Grand Slam, as they call it, which is a tarpon, a permit, and a bonefish.
So I'll try to land those on the fly in my last few months here in the Florida Keys. So, yeah, those are fun adventures. Corey, what updates do you have for us?
Well, it's been a few weeks since I've been on. And I've gone on several hunting trips. We went on a goose hunting trip there at the end of October. And we had some luck. I actually got a banded bird that was banded in the same area, but in 2015, so it was a five-year-old bird, so that was pretty cool.
And nice.
And I brought home a bunch of breasts and legs and thighs, and I made that wine-braised waterfowl that's in the Meat Eater cookbook. That was pretty good. Put it over some roasted red potatoes. It was good.
Ooh, that was good. What'd you do with the – this seems like an off question in related to food, but what'd you do with the band? Did you put it on your goose calling lanyard?
Well, I would have if I had any goose calls. It is on my truck keys.
So, oh, that's a pretty cool thing to do with it.
It's in my pocket every day.
I have one of those lanyards that has like a fake one on it, and I always – wanted to, back when I used to be more avid in waterfowl hunting, like to just like stack it up, like jewelry. I forget, what are those, like Pandora bracelets that ladies wear, and they have all the little jangles all around it. I want my duck call lanyard to look like a Pandora bracelet. But so Meat Eater recipe for the goose. Yep. Anything else with it, or just everything went into that?
I haven't cooked any of the breasts yet. I typically do pastrami and stuff, but or smoke it, but I haven't decided what I have a lot of it. There was the big group of us went, so we got a lot of birds. I don't think quite our limit, but pretty close. So I brought home 9 birds. So
man, that's a good haul.
Yeah. And that was, they were trying to give me more because they didn't want to clean them. And I was like, 9's enough for me. So,
but yeah, then pastrami would be good.
But my big news is I got a buck with my bow this couple weekends ago, or Friday the 13th. So lucky Friday the 13th.
Well, it was good luck for you, but not for the buck.
No, right. One of my first bucks since I was in high school with a bow. I've gotten some with gun since then, but I've been on a pretty nasty drought as far as archery bucks go. But I was finally able to end it, thankfully. But my good friend Jason.
What does a nasty drought look like? How long?
2003.
Holy smokes. 17 years?
For an archery buck, yeah. 17
years. Yeah, for an archery buck.
Yeah. So it was a nasty drought. Holy
smokes. It was pretty nasty.
Yeah. I went, like 4 or 5 years in a row getting a buck with the bow, and then a long, long time without it. My friend JC was up. We were planning to hunt all weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, because it was the first Sunday allowed for hunting in Pennsylvania in modern times. So we were planning on, spending the whole weekend out in the woods. And Friday morning, our first morning of hunting, I got out, I'm all ready for a full day sit. Got all my snacks and my gear and water and all that stuff that you take into the woods. And I get up into the stand and, I'm getting set and it's getting light out. It's past legal shooting hours. I can see to shoot, but I'm still kind of getting situated. And as I'm getting situated, I see a tree shaking. I'm like, that doesn't look like a squirrel. And it was a buck. And I don't know if he was making a rub or freshening up a scrape or something, but he was right there. And he couldn't have been very far away when I walked in. I must have been quiet enough to where I didn't disturb him. But he walked after messing with that tree. He walked right in, less than 20 yards, and I took the shot and saw him go down and got up to him. And I think he's one of my best bucks. He only had 7 points, but they're super tall tines and real long brow tines. I think like a 17-inch spread or something like that. So I'm definitely happy with them.
Pretty good.
And that all happened by like 7 o'clock on Friday morning. So within the first 15, 20 minutes of the first day of hunting, for the weekend, I got them. So, I helped JC out a little bit. I did some drives for him then, you know, over the next day. And then the Sunday rolls around and, it was like 40 mile an hour, 50 mile an hour gusts of wind. It was just a driving rain. So we did not hunt on Sunday. So
wait, you're telling me that the first hunt in Pennsylvania's recorded history on a Sunday, you didn't hunt?
No. Well, I had my buck. I had my buck, and it was nasty out there. It was nasty.
Oh man.
I guess you could say I'm a fair weather hunter.
Man, that's a news article right there.
Yeah, definitely.
That's all right, man. I probably would have been the same way. I mean, you kind of checked that box and then had some nasty weather to contend with. I don't think historics or not, I don't know if it'd be worth it.
Yeah.
But was this the weekend that it overlapped with bear?
It's been archery bear and archery deer have overlapped for nearly a month.
Isn't there there's a point where archery deer and primitive rifle bear overlap, right? Isn't that what we talked with Tyler about?
Yes, that was in mid-October that there's
been, okay, so that's past. Okay.
Yeah, that there was an early season inline muzzleloader for doe only, but that also coincided with muzzleloader bear, which I went out several times with. I did the dual carry in case I saw a buck, bow and muzzleloader, but I did not get anything. And so by the time this podcast comes out, bear will be concluded.
It concludes like this weekend.
Let me look at the calendar here. So bear is the 22nd, which is a Sunday, and like the 23rd and 24th. So leading up to Thanksgiving.
Okay. So the day before this releases. Yeah.
I probably I'm probably not going out for bear. I don't typically go out for rifle bear, and I've been hunting so much since September. I think there was like 2 weekends I haven't hunted since September, so give my wife a little bit of a break before rifle season, which opens up the Saturday after Thanksgiving.
Well, hopefully you have the same luck as you did in archery, and you just go out the first Friday and boom, it's done.
Right. Yeah. I can only get a doe, and which is fine. I'm okay with that, but I like the rifle season, 'cause that's, you know, my dad and I always go together. So it's kind of a tradition, and I don't hunt as much as I'd like to with him. So it's a chance to get out with him.
Nice. That's good. Does he have a buck tag or just,
yep,
doe as well?
He has a buck tag.
Okay, cool.
So we might switch stands, 'cause I think my stand's a little bit better area for bucks. So hopefully he gets an opportunity.
Nice. That'd be good. So you've been working on cleaning up your buck from archery. So how's that going?
I just finished it tonight. I put in a couple long nights. I don't know if it's me just being slow or too particular, or if it's just it's taking a long time. Although I enjoy it. I just a couple long nights make for
sipping hot cocoa and whiskey. Yeah. I think that's what's wrong,
right? Well, I did that after.
Okay.
The garage gets pretty cold. It's like I don't have a heated garage, but I do it out there because my butcher block is and stuff. And so it was like 30, 35 degrees out there, and you know, come inside, warm up with hot cocoa spiked with some whiskey. So it was good.
So you talk about your butcher block. I saw, is that the same one that you posted on the Hank Shaw?
Yeah. Yep.
Facebook group.
Yep.
So where did you acquire that?
My wife's grandparents, her grandfather passed away a couple years ago, and her grandmother is moving out of that house, has moved out of that house this summer. And her grandfather, I don't know where he got it from. He's a machinist, or he was a machinist. So he might've gotten it from the machine shop.
So is it like a full traditional like square butcher block, or is it a little different?
It's how big is it? I don't know. 2 feet by 4 feet, or 2 feet by 3.5 feet, and it's like 2 inches thick. It's on steel legs, and then I put casters on the bottom of it, so I can roll it around my garage, which I have utilized it many times already with the doe I got and the buck and the squirrels. And so it's a vital piece of equipment now.
Nice. Sounds like it's coming in handy. That's good. I was curious where you got it when I saw the picture on the Facebook group. I was very curious as to where you acquired it and how, because I've been looking at building one for myself, and I got a couple buddies here because we do a lot of fish, so they use that like sort of plastic composite board as the top, and then it's like framed out with wood, and they'll put like little slots in it, put like a bucket at the bottom so you can slide the fish carcass and all that stuff off into it. But I'm kind of bouncing back and forth between like an actual wood one and then maybe trying that composite. So not really sure. I'm definitely like a solid 50-50 on which one I would want. But I have a bunch of large like wood cutting boards that I typically do all my work on.
So I have a couple big cutting boards for inside, and that's how I had done it in the past. Just done it at my kitchen counter with the big cutting boards, but they're a pain in the butt to clean in the sink, you know, scraping that off. But with this being out in the garage, I have like a vinegar water spray, and I pick all the big, you know, chunks off, and I wipe it down, and then I have like a, it's kind of like a Scotch-Brite pad type thing, and I'll scrub it really good with that and then spray it down again and wipe it off clean. And it takes like 2 minutes to do, and I'm not plugging up the drain in the house and getting water all over the counter and the floor and the kitchen. So it makes things super convenient for cleanup.
Nice. That's good. Awesome. Well, it sounds like you progressed on that. I'm excited to see what's going to become of the deer as the months go by. And
I did save the heart, the liver, and the caul fat. Although when I gutted it out in the field, I got some dirt in the caul fat, which is super hard to pick out of there.
Yeah, you think you're gonna discard that part, or you're gonna try to just clean it off as best you can?
I don't know. I'm gonna throw it in the freezer, and when it comes time to use it, I might try to cut out those little pieces, but we'll see. And then I don't know. I don't like liver straight up, so I don't know if I'll do another batch of boudin or what, but
another run.
Yeah, I don't want to say I screwed up the first one, but it didn't work out exactly as I had hoped, but we'll give it another shot.
Nice. All right. Well, I do want to give Ben the opportunity to introduce himself and tell us a little bit about what he's got going on. So, Ben, over to you. Welcome. This is your first podcast episode.
Thanks. So I'm Ben. I'm the new managing editor over at Harvesting Nature. I don't know. I guess I'll do just a really quick little bio too. Just grew up in northern New Jersey, doing a lot of hunting, fishing. There's a lot more opportunities out there than people think. Lived in upstate New York for a while, did a lot of fly fishing, got into bow hunting there. Just moved to Oregon. So September, I did my first archery elk season, which was something I've wanted to do for a long time, which was super cool. And I just got back from hunting whitetails in PA and New York, which kind of kicked my butt, but yeah, so that's it.
I'll ask you the question I ask everybody. Favorite wild game dish?
Favorite wild game dish. I love that the Hank Shaw recipe, the Icelandic blueberry tenderloin recipe that he's got.
Ooh.
It's super good. Yeah, it's just like blueberries, red wine, some mushrooms, reduction. It's just awesome. With a coal cannon on the side, it's perfect. It's not that hard either.
Awesome. It's good. I like a good straightforward recipe too. Hank's got some good stuff, for sure.
Yes.
All right. Well, like I mentioned earlier, so one really cool thing that we've been doing is we have a new camouflage American flag shirt up on the website. And the really cool thing about this is, you know, a lot of companies out there have camouflage American flag themed shirts, but ours is unique in the fact that we're taking 50% of the proceeds of this shirt and we're donating to veteran outdoor organizations. So that's really cool for us because it hits pretty close to home with a lot of us being active duty or veterans on the Harvesting Nature crew. So we tend to like to look after our own and those who have served. We understand the conditions and all that. And the outdoors is a great way to reconnect, blow off steam, and use some of those skills that we acquired doing the various jobs that we did throughout our time in the military. So with that, if you go over to the show notes, you'll find the link to that shirt. You should go check it out. It's a pretty neat shirt. I've got mine on standby, so it should be here pretty soon. So I'm excited to receive it and wear it proudly. But other than that, too, we got a new Adventures for Food podcast just came out. So go check that out as well. Roll back one episode in your podcast list, and you'll be able to listen to that. Those are always our short, succinct versions of adventures that are coming from our field staff riders. They're out there doing fun stuff, but generally like 10 to 15 minute episodes, maybe some shorter ones, just going out for food and the adventures that come with it. But with Thanksgiving coming up tomorrow, as you're listening to this, or today if you're listening to it on Thanksgiving, we definitely want to talk about how to prepare wild turkey for Thanksgiving dinner and some other wild game dishes that accompany the dinner as well. So we're really going to try to – we're going to hit a couple apps. We're going to hit a couple mains and some desserts because let's just dive right into it. And I want to lead off the apps here. So this has come from Elevated Wild, which is a great wild food website. And I actually saw
Wade, the creator of this recipe, make this recipe during the Backcountry Hunter and Angler's Rendezvous. And it's a cold smoked venison tartare. So I believe, Corey, we've featured a tartare recipe on here before. Or no, carpaccio.
Yeah, carpaccio.
Very similar, just kind of a little different stuff going on. But Wade does a really awesome job with this one. And I think the cool thing that I got to see sort of visually when I was watching the video is the fact that it's almost frozen whenever he puts it in the smoker, and he's rolling the smoker. I think he's using a Traeger. He's rolling on like the very lowest setting possible. And so, and he's got the thermometer inside the meat in the backstrap the whole entire time while he's doing it. And as the meat comes up to a certain temperature, he pulls it off and he puts it back in the freezer, back on ice again. Not like an ice water bath so that you're watering it down, but like maybe in a Ziploc, sitting in ice just to like cool it back down. But he tries to maintain the temperature of the meat to keep it from cooking. Because that's the essential part of a tartare recipe, is that you want your meat raw. So he's, for safety's sake, he's frozen it hard leading into it. And then as he smokes it, he plays with the temperature to keep it where it's at. But basically just keeping it as cold as possible. So he's starting, like I said, partially frozen. And then you're going to smoke it for 30 minutes. Long enough for it to get some of the smoky flavor, but you don't want to let the internal temperature get above 50 degrees. So like what I was saying, and then put it back in the freezer, another 20, 30 minutes, leave your smoker rolling, pull it back out, and you're kind of just, you're repeating this process as much as you desire, but you want to keep it cold for food safety reasons, but also you're going to be eating it raw, so you don't want it super warm and weird. Once you get that, I mean, you got cool mixture of stuff you're mixing it with, lemon, capers, pine nuts, pistachios, lots of stuff to serve in it and on it. Basically like a really pretty, beautiful plate. So yeah, so you get everything kind of mixed together, but super fun appetizer. It, as I've heard, takes on the smoke flavor pretty well. Which is good, but then also you get a lot of really good flavor, and I think it's a definite crowd pleaser because it's something not like super unusual, but something people probably aren't going to consistently prepare in their kitchen with backstrap. So, and we'll change gears. So, Corey, you got your world famous Chipotle Squirrel barbecue dip.
I mean, it's super simple. The kids love it. Every time we get squirrels, that's their preferred meal with it. And it's, you know, it's the perfect finger food too. You know, waiting around for the turkey to cook, you just dip a tortilla chip in it. But so I braise the squirrels down, pick the meat, and then it is like ranch, barbecue sauce, couple chipotle peppers, cilantro, shredded cheese, and cream cheese. So it's and some firing lime chipotle seasoning to give it some extra kick. So it and it's one that you don't have to be like super precise on your measurements of the various ingredients. You know, add a couple more chipotle peppers to get it more hot, or take some out.
Yeah, you like it more, you like it spicier than what everybody else does, right?
I'm the only one in the house that kind of likes spicy food, so since the kids like it so much, I'll only put a couple chipotle peppers in there. Or leave them out completely, so it's more of like a barbecue squirrel dip. But it,
nice.
And it's one of those things that gets better like the next day.
Mm-hmm. The flavors marry. Cool. Well, I think that I could definitely see that on the table for appetizers. I would pick at it for sure while I was waiting for the rest of the food to come along. Another one that I thought was really cool, because we've been on, if you've been listening and following us regularly, you know that we've been on sort of this like awful kick, not awful, but awful. So like Corey mentioned, the hearts, the livers, the call fat, the tongues, all those things. And, when I was doing a little research for this, one great recipe by, Danielle Pruitt over on the Meat Eater website is it's a venison heart crostini recipe, which I love crostinis. Being a chef, that's definitely something easy to throw together and to make as like a pass hors d'oeuvre at any type of party or social gathering. So, super easy to put together, but I like hers because it has a bunch of different elements that really comes together to make it both like really beautiful, but also really flavorful. So you need one deer heart, deer, antelope, elk, moose, whatever. One baguette. I would probably say that if you're going to have an elk or moose, you may need more than one baguette, but that could be seen. I always end up buying two when I just need one, and then end up snacking on the other when I'm cooking. But she has a really good, a couple like sub recipes in this one: honey and garlic goat cheese, which is exactly as it sounds like, combining goat cheese, warm cream, and honey. And then pickled mustard seeds. If you've never made pickled mustard seeds, you definitely should, because they are magical. You essentially are taking dried mustard seeds and you're rehydrating them and then putting them in the vinegar and letting them sit so that they absorb that flavor. And it's pretty awesome. The one thing, have you ever had them, Corey or Ben? Have you guys had pickled mustard seeds before?
No, I have not.
I have not. No, this recipe looks really good though. Definitely would give them a try.
You guys have had though, like trout roe or salmon roe, would kind of get like the little ball and you bite it and like give you a little burst of flavor.
Yep. Super good.
So pickle mustard seeds are sort of the same, but you're getting like that kind of vinegary mustard flavor.
Cool.
So like the same little consistency, but pretty awesome. And so after you take your heart and you really trim it down and get it cleaned up, which Danielle also has a really great video on how to break down a heart. I appreciate her analogy for using like a bell pepper. We've referenced that before sort of in some of our previous episodes where we talked about how to clean a heart. And you essentially just season and sear the deer heart and then throw everything together on the crostinis, which are essentially just sliced, toasted pieces of baguette. And that's that. It's a really good one. I think it would do well.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to throw like a soup in there too. And in for the appetizers, just because I think it's warm or it's cooler time of the year. Everybody likes chowders. So our very own wild fish chowder with rosemary cornbread, corn muffins. I would say cornbread, but corn muffins. And I think it's a pretty good one, just because everybody loves a good chowder. And then you also get the additional recipe of the corn muffins, which are also super phenomenal. Kind of your standard corn muffin recipe, minus the fact that you're going to be putting rosemary inside of them. That's it. Give it a little extra flavor. And then the chowder itself, you're looking for any white flaky fish. So that covers a lot of different fish around the U.S. And then onion, scallion, celery, corn, leeks, thyme, using seafood stock and white wine, heavy cream, and you're combining all those things inside the pot to make a nice, hearty chowder.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
I think we covered the appetizers pretty well. And sort of the whole thought of this, I'll reiterate it again, is like if you want to piece together a wild game and fish themed like Thanksgiving meal, like these are just some recommendations. Of course, you're welcome to mosey to the right or to the left of whatever you like, but some good solid recommendations with all the recipes in the show notes. So we do have a couple different ways of making wild turkey, because that's it's a big thing for Thanksgiving apparently, because everybody enjoys a nice turkey. Corey, do they have fall turkey up there right now?
Yes. In my area, I think it's closed.
Okay.
But and down near my parents, I think it opens up. There's like a three-day season around Thanksgiving too, usually. So I don't think I'll be out turkey hunting.
Nope. No. Looking for deer or taking a break.
Well, leading up to Thanksgiving, yep, taking a little bit of a break. Give my wife a breather.
Nice.
She deserves it.
Ben, how's the they have a fall turkey season in Oregon?
They do, but I didn't look into it because I'm still considered a non-resident, so all the tags are just super expensive. So I didn't even try, but there is one.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Yeah, there's parts of Florida where it I think the northern part of Florida, certain areas they have a fall season, and then most everything kicks off here in the spring, kind of statewide. So you have to save your bird from the spring most places here. But so we've got really three methods that I kind of wanted to talk about, and one being the first, the deep fried, which is kind of the standard way everybody knows. I put the link in here as a video. And they do kind of a good job of breaking the bird down and then put it in the deep fryer. And I thought it was really interesting because they left the legs on it. It's kind of like a little handle, like the bottom part where you'd find the spurs, so that they can kind of dip it in and out of the oil and move it around as needed. But doesn't matter if you're doing a domestically raised turkey or farm-raised turkey, or a wild turkey, the deep fry is going to kind of be the same as long as you're paying attention to your internal temps. And then we have Hank Shaw's turkey breast recipe, which I don't know, Corey, you want to talk about that one at all? Or Ben, either one of you guys?
I've cooked that one before. It is, if it's the one I'm thinking of, yeah, it is amazing.
Smoked turkey breast?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done that too. It's super good.
So what's your guys' favorite part about it?
The honey maple syrup glaze that goes on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. I looked at it, and from the photos, like, it looks really great. Like the glaze on the outside really sets apart from the white meat on the inside, but you can also see that it transfers into the meat itself. So say you have a turkey and you only have the breast, or you're preparing a meal for a small group of people. Not a lot of people are going to eat a whole turkey, or in like my case, I don't really care much for turkey. So if I do prepare one at all, it's just usually like a breast. So this would be a good recipe for that. And then you got the old spatchcock smoked turkey or grilled turkey or baked turkey, whichever you want to do it. But I'm definitely like hugely fascinated, and I like cooking the like spatchcock method. Are you guys familiar with that method?
Yep. I've never done it, but I know what it is.
Yeah. It's super proficient, just because for those people out there that are listening that don't know it, you basically like split the bird at the breastbone on either side of it, the right and left side, and then just kind of like lay it open like a book. And it just allows it to cook much, much faster because you don't have to penetrate all the depth of the turkey. But I mean, you still, the entire process itself is still the same. You're still looking for the same internal temperature. You can brine it, you can marinate it, you can dry rub it, you can do whatever, you can wrap it in foil. All those things are the same. It's just the way you're cutting it for the grill, and it just saves so much time, which I like. Next up, so what would Thanksgiving turkey be without a holiday ham? And we really have sort of two recipes that stand out for the ham. You have two different methods of thoughts for hams. You have your cured ham, which is where you're curing it some type of curing salts or curing substance. That's where you get that nice like pink color from. And then you have like a ham where it's uncured. And the first ham we have is uncured, and it's a holiday ham. And this is Dustin Carroll. Remember him from the very beginnings of the podcast. But Dustin has a tried and true like family recipe where he makes the ham. He shoots wild boars, and you basically just like continuously put this guy on there and crisscross cut, and then brown sugar, dry mustard, and you're doing a little dry rub, and then you're going to put the ham in the oven and then take a bunch of other ingredients, which includes 24 ounces of cream soda, agave syrup, maple syrup, clove, cinnamon stick, anise, half an orange, and a half a lemon rind. And you put all those down and like reduce them down until they get nice and thick and liquidy. And then you're just going to continue like every 15 minutes, you're going to put it on the top of that ham and like really let it soak in that flavor. It actually makes me hungry just thinking about it.
You're talking about cured and uncured, and it made me think of something as going back to the turkeys. Like store-bought turkeys are coming like a brine solution already, so I wouldn't recommend brining them before cooking them because I think you can get too salty. But a wild turkey
first,
for a store bought.
Sorry, I was agreeing.
For a wild turkey, I would definitely recommend brining it before smoking it or roasting it or I don't know if you'd have to brine it before you deep fry it. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, I don't know. I think you would have to be very careful because you're dealing with water and hot oil. One, two, when you fry it, you experience a lot less loss of moisture because the science behind it, like once you put the meat in the hot oil, it kind of creates this barrier around the meat that kind of like helps keep moisture inside. So there's that thought while like crisping it up also. So I don't know that I would brine a turkey if I was going to put it. I would probably be more likely to like inject it. I know that's pretty common with the fried turkeys.
Well, but I did a fried turkey, was it last year? And I just did it was a store-bought turkey. I just did a rub on it, a little bit of like olive oil
to
get it to stick, and like got my hand underneath the skin and got the rub on there. And it came out really good. I was happy with it.
You could definitely do probably a dry brine. So that's where you're taking like a rub mixture that has a higher salt content, and you're going to rub the turkey down, and then you let it set overnight. And that should help like tenderize. It's not going to be as great as if you submerged it, but I would definitely be cautious and do a little research before I threw a wet brine turkey into a hot pot of grease.
Yeah. But I think you definitely need to brine it if you're going to smoke it. Agreed. Or roast definitely. It.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
And we're going to do one turkey this year, but we don't know if it's going to be enough. So I'm going to roast a couple pheasants, and I plan to brine them beforehand and then throw them on the pellet grill.
So the other ham we have a recipe for is like the cured ham, and that's another recipe from Danielle all over on the Meat Eater page. And this one, the biggest thing about here is you got to do a little bit of forethought, and you got to think ahead because you're going to brine it, and you're going to brine it in a combination of things. So cold water, kosher salt, sugar, curing salt, peppercorn, bay leaf, mustard seeds, all those things. And you're going to let it set in the brine for like 3 to 4 days. And so that's where you got to think about like, all right, well, it's Monday and I need to get this in the brine so it can cure before I smoke it on Thursday. So just something to think about. But after you get that done, like throwing it on the smoker, bring it to 180 and rinse your ham really well. And you're going to make up a glaze too, which just glaze sounds really good. It's yellow mustard, apple cider vinegar, honey, garlic, and black pepper. I think she lists on here this recipe would also work with bear. So if you want to do a nice bear ham for the holidays, which would be cool. So 2 hours of smoking, and then every hour after you're going to lightly baste the ham with the glaze, and then you're going to smoke the ham until it reaches an internal temperature of 160 degrees. You're going to smoke to 150. If you find the meat begins to stall, you can bump the heat up a little bit, she says. But you're looking like 8 to 12 hours, depending on the size of the ham. That's a good amount of time. It's about the same. I did a whole pork leg in the smoker back a couple months ago, and yeah, it took about 12 hours to do. So that's a fair amount of time, but really awesome recipe. We'll do a little birds, some upland. I like this one. So I chose this one because it goes well and it has a cornbread dressing, which is a huge thing on my table. We're big on eating cornbread dressing for Thanksgiving. So roasted quail with sage and squash cornbread dressing. So you're going to need 6 semi-deboned quail. So that means you're basically like breaking it down. You're taking the legs, the almost kind of like halved, but you're moving the inside of it. There's a nice video on the recipe on how to semi-debone quail. And then you're doing cornbread, onion, celery, squash, stock, fresh sage, all that stuff. And you preheat your oven. And then mix up all your ingredients for the cornbread. You know, saute off the vegetables. Crumble up your cooked cornbread in the bowl. Add the stock. Mix everything. And then put your quail pieces on top after they're seasoned and just let it bake about 20, 30 minutes. And it's really cool because the juices from the quail will soak down into the cornbread and give it some extra flavor. So you really get that nice dressing flavor. You guys big on dressings for Thanksgiving? I guess like stuffing, dressing, different.
I'll eat it.
Yeah, I'm kind of indifferent too.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's like a big thing in my house. Like my grandmother makes I guess not my house, what used to be my house. My grandmother makes a good cornbread stuffing or dressing.
Yeah, I've never heard it called a dressing either.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's probably definitely a southern thing. We also have, you get, depending on where you're at in Louisiana, they do like a seafood dressing. So you get like oysters and shrimp and a bunch of different things in there. So that's a very unique thing as well that I had never eaten anywhere else until I got to Louisiana. So it was pretty cool. But a lot of cornbread. I've seen people do it with like that stuffing mix that kind of made like breadcrumbs and stuff. Not the same in my opinion, but still probably good.
My wife just made ahead some stuffing. Gets like the bread cubes, probably what you were just saying you don't like, but like sage, sage and parsley and rosemary, and then some sausage. I think she's gonna make a couple people coming don't eat wild game, so we had to make a non-wild game. But I think she might be making a venison sausage version of it as well.
Ooh, that's pretty good. That sounds good. We had a few more listed on the list here, but I'm going to bump down to desserts just because we're running out of time. And I think we've covered some good areas. One recipe I'll mention real quick is a homemade fish sticks with tasty mashed potatoes. So mashed potatoes often find themselves on Thanksgiving tables. Fish does or does not, depending on where you're at. But these fish sticks are pretty much like a wild homemade version of the fish sticks that we all grew up eating. I made this recipe during COVID, along with a couple other like kid friendly and kid themed recipes, like a steak finger recipe that I grew up with, that substituted venison in for beef. And, I was really proud of this one. My daughter really enjoyed it. So I would check that out. It's baked, not fried, so it's a little different. So it really is like the old school, like out of the box fish sticks, but you make it with fresh fish. So that would be a good, I think, crowd pleaser for a Thanksgiving table, and give it a little variety if you got some fish in the freezer or feel like going out and catching something. And as always, don't forget the vegetables. There's some great vegetable recipes out there. I encourage you to get beyond the candied yams and cranberry sauce for your fruits and vegetables for that. So try something different.
I love the sweet potatoes. It's good.
I do like sweet potatoes too. We eat sweet potatoes pretty much every week in my house. So the excitement of them has waned. But let's talk about some other sweets. So you guys ever used fats to bake with?
Nope, I have not.
Yeah. I'm not a big baker, and I've announced that several times on the show. I can bake to get around it or bake if I need to, but not on this level. And the first one is another meat eater recipe. It is a bare fat chocolate croissants. And essentially like treating the bare fat just like butter when you're making your croissant dough. So bread, flour, water, yeast, sugar, all that. Chocolate bars. You have your egg yolk and egg wash. And you can also use pork lard if you don't have bare fat.
What about beef tallow? I bought a gallon of it. I have a lot of it.
That's a lot of beef tallow.
Yeah.
Grass. I would think it's going to be an interesting flavor, but you could probably do it for sure. As long as it has the same consistency as like a lard or I mean, they're all technically lards, pork lard or bear rendered bear fat. I think it would be fine. What's the consistency?
Well, it's hard. Because you got to store it in the fridge. So.
Yeah, but when you let it come up to room temp, it gets like a little soft, white, and pasty.
Yeah. We ate the innerloins of my deer this week, and in the pan, I melted that first, and then seared the pieces with that and put a nice crust on it. It's good. Using the beef tallow.
Yep. So another one on our list that I'm not going to go into super detail about, but it's another one from Elevated Wild, and it's beaver fat biscuits. And that's usually kind of like the same thing. They're combining those those fats in there in place of butter. But I really want to hit on this prickly pear cheesecake. Just because, and it's cheesecake ice cream. Sorry, let me read the full context of it. And this is over on the Hunt to Eat website, which, as you remember, we've had two awesome young ladies from the Hunt to Eat community on the podcast back a few episodes ago, and had some great conversations, and they helped coin the Venison Diplomacy t-shirt, Venison Diplomat. So thanks for that. But this one, prickly pear. You guys know what prickly pear is?
Yep.
Never had it,
but I know what it is.
Yep. So those are the, you're basically getting to the flower of the, like, what are they called? I call them like nopales, but like the pad cactus. Not the ones you see like in the cartoon all the time that has like the three, the one shoot in the middle and the one things that look like arms sticking up in the air, but they're the ones that look like the big pads, like kind of pie plates. So they produce their flour before it goes to flour, I believe. And somebody will probably correct me if I'm wrong on that, but in one phase of that, the fruit that grows off of it, which they produce either one or two times a year, when they turn kind of a maroonish color, you go harvest them and they make an amazing like juice. You juice it down. It's got some seeds and stuff in there, but phenomenal. We have a recipe with rabbit on the website, but using the same process. But once you get this juice, you could probably use any sort of, I think the closest thing that you would have would be like a pomegranate juice, although not as rustic, not as native to North America, obviously. And you got cream cheese, vanilla, lemon, salt. You're making a whipped cream, and you're essentially making basically a cheesecake consistency for ice cream. And then, you're folding in the whipped cream. Yeah. And then you put them into a freezer-safe dish and cover. So instead of like doing your traditional like rotating ice cream thing, you're just hand mixing everything. Cool. That's exciting. And then we have a smoked pumpkin pie with bourbon whipped cream. That's I think is really cool. I made that a couple years ago on the Traeger. So you're essentially just taking your pumpkin pie, which this one's good. It's got pecans and stuff with it. And you're cooking it on the Traeger, and then your bourbon whipped cream. You're just making basically handmade whipped cream, which my first job in sort of a real heavy-duty kitchen, I started off working the dessert station, and I had to make handmade whipped cream every day. We had to do a chocolate and a vanilla every day. And so you get used to making handmade whipped cream, which is 10 times better than anything else you'll find in the store, I promise you. Buy some heavy whipping cream, get a whisk, and just like go at it. You'll appreciate it. But I don't know. Do you guys have any other recipes that fall into any of those sections?
I want to talk about that blueberry bread pudding.
Okay.
Because in our area, blueberries are pretty popular. We have a friend. I mean, there's a golf course up the road called Blueberry Hill because there's lots of blueberries. But our friend has a big blueberry patch, and we go there and pick. So we always have blueberries in the freezer. So my wife made this blueberry. It's called over the top blueberry bread pudding. So we use the blueberries from our friend's property, and for work several years ago, I was in Mexico, and one of the things from Mexico is the vanilla extract. It's like 10 times better from there than anything you can get in a store up here. So my wife used that, and then with the fresh or the blueberries, they weren't fresh anymore. We had them frozen because you'd pick them in June. But mix all that stuff up with some French bread and sugar and heavy whipping cream and some eggs, white baking chips. It was super decadent. But it was so good. Dude, it like I was, I was surprised at how good it was, because it's like bread pudding. That doesn't sound good at all, but it was amazing.
Man, I love bread pudding. It's too like a southern thing as well. But oh man, that sounds good. I like the white baking chips too. Almost kind of like a white chocolate type feel to it. I was gonna say, is there anything special that you guys make for Thanksgiving? It doesn't have to be wild. Just anything like a traditional meal that you always make or part of the meal.
Just your standards: mashed potatoes, turkey, green bean casserole. Nice.
Ooh, I do like a good green bean casserole with like ham in it too.
I don't think ours has ham, but the French onion stuff on top, French's fried onions.
Yep. What about you, Ben? Anything special you guys do for Thanksgiving?
Not really. Despite that, I'm 32. Usually, my mother does everything.
That's fair.
She loves to cook, so she loves to just kind of do the whole thing. And you know, me and my brother are older, so she likes to kind of just do everything and get to play mom, even though we're grown up. But I'm out here in Oregon, and I'm not going home because of COVID. So my girlfriend and I are planning, trying to figure out what we're going to do still. So not really sure.
So this year, I always try to cook like one thing new. And I've been catching up a lot on Anthony Bourdain's episodes of Parts Unknown. So I'm a huge Anthony Bourdain fan. I have been for a very long time, for those people that don't know it. It's a weird connect I have with the kitchen and travel and all that other stuff. But I've been watching, and one episode that stood out to me is he goes to Lyon, and he travels there with this very well-renowned French chef, and they go like to his family's basically like farm, and they eat like kind of farmhouse meals. And one of the dishes that they make is like a farmhouse pumpkin dish, and they take a whole pumpkin and carve it out, take all the seeds, they leave the meat. They basically like cap it at the top, so you can pull the top of it off, but you still have the insides hollow and all intact. And they take bread, cream, lots of wild mushrooms, so you could use pretty much a variety of mushrooms. They take Gruyere cheese, and I forgot if I mentioned bread or not, but they take bread, like bread chunks, like you would think of just for like bread pudding. And they put it in there, and they top it with like salted ham or salted pork, so like bacon equivalent. It'd be like thick cut cured bacon. And they put the cap back on it, and then they put it in a wood fired oven, and they just let it cook for like 45 minutes or so. Really dependent on the size of the pumpkin, but I'm going to try that for Thanksgiving and see how it comes out, because it just to me sounds like decadent and awesome and amazing.
Going to do that on the Traeger?
Yeah, I think so. I think it'll be a Traeger product, so it'll be a little smoky. The pumpkin will.
Nice.
But I like to use the pumpkin for cooking, especially in the fall, just because I think that outside of like a pumpkin pie and stuff like that, like a pumpkin's really underutilized this time of year, and I think they're very abundant and they're in season, so they're great. I have one sitting on my cabinet right now that I'm going to cook with over the next week. So that's kind of like my special meal that I'm trying. But we'll do a quick around the room or around the podcast and see. So Corey, any misfires, alibis?
No, just happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Hopefully, and good luck to all the PA rifle hunters that are going to go out on Saturday.
Yep. Good luck, guys. And Ben, last thoughts?
Nothing really. Yeah. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. New York rifle opens Sunday too, I think. So good luck. Everybody's out there next week. That's about it.
Awesome. Well, I also want to wish a happy Thanksgiving to everybody, and I hope that you've enjoyed our sort of wild Thanksgiving episode, and it's what it's evolved into, sharing some great recipes with you, which is what we like to do all the time. So, yeah, I hope if you do cook some of these things up, please let us know, and we'll make sure to share your feedback and answer any questions you may have. But other than that, head over to social media, Harvest of Nature, on all the platforms, and go ahead and whatever podcast platform you listen to, punch that 5-star button, leave us a review, tell us what we're doing wrong, tell us what we're doing right. And I forgot to mention too, we're doing reviews for hats, so 5-star reviews. We read your review on the podcast, we'll send you a free hat. If you feel it, leave a review. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.